Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to our second installment of this special podcast at 95.7thegame.com with Ray Rattle, Roxy Bernstein, and a new name this week, Ray. We had to ditch the old name for legal reasons, I guess.
Yeah. So now, apparently you can't use living things for titles. Thank God for corporate lawyers. Otherwise, where would we be?
I'm afraid to mention a shark that's passed away just because.
Well, then let's not mention any players at all, since they'd probably prefer it after the start they've had.
Okay. Yeah. We can get start there, speaking of starts, with Pursuit of the Cup is our podcast, our newly renamed and christened Pursuit of the Cup. We're doing this on the heels of the Sharks losing in Nashville and getting ready to play the Chicago Blackhawks in game number 5. And they have matched the worst start in franchise history. So they have an accomplishment. They're 0-4. Do you want to start there, or do you want to start with the bigger news where the Sharks are bringing back one of their former stars?
Let's start with their start, because I think that's probably more important in terms of impact than the guy that they just signed.
Okay. We'll get to Patrick Marleau coming up.
Yeah.
But
he'll
first things
right
first,
out.
Look, they're not playing well, and that's very clear. They have struggled. It's been a rough go. The schedule makers did him no favors. Evander Kane did them no favors by getting suspended for the first three games. There's a lot of stuff that's gone on that's helped this 0-4 start, made it a reality.
They look old. I mean, that's the one thing that just comes out of all four games. I mean, the schedule maker, look, they're going to play Vegas 6 times. That's the deal. And Vegas is way better than they are. But they've done literally nothing on their end to make you think that this can be fixed easily. I mean, they've taken a ton of shots, scored next to nothing. I think their shot percentage right now is like below 4, which is obscene. And they haven't shown much, teeth. They haven't shown very many teeth in defense. They look bad. I don't believe they're as bad as this, but this is the start that exposed all the things that their critics would point to. They don't do anything on the right side of the ice. Their goaltending is still not sharp, and their defense is more interested in going forward than staying at home. I think it's just they look like the window is closing and they don't know it yet.
And the shot numbers can be deceiving, right? Okay, they're generating shots, and in a number of their games already, they have outshot their opponent, but that doesn't necessarily equal good scoring chances. And they're not generating good chances that are high probability opportunities, right? A lot of shots are coming from the perimeter and the outside, or they're getting shots where the goalie has a clear look at what's coming at him. They're not generating those and putting pressure, except in small snippets. Like, we saw it a little bit, like, at the end of the second period when they took it to Nashville a bit last night, right? When they got the power play goal, Evander Kane makes his impact coming back from suspension, tips it past Pecorine, makes it a 2-1 game. And the Sharks are buzzing. They're flying around the Nashville net. Don't cash in, but they have some momentum going to the third, down 2-1. They make a mistake, and it ends up in the back of their net. Unfortunately, that's been, right now, that's been the San Jose Sharks so far in 2019-2020, is you make a mistake, it turns into the red light going on back at the other end of the ice.
Well, but I mean, when you dig deeper, though, you find out that the real problem is that they generate about an average number of decent chances, but what they allow is a ton of high danger scoring chances to the other guys. I mean, it's just, I think they're fourth in the league in the number of really good scoring chances that their opponents have gotten. And to me, that's what stands out. I think getting Kane back will help them get some more scoring chances, but it's the ones they allow that Kane's return doesn't change, that signing Patrick Marleau doesn't change. They have not been very devoted to the defensive side of the game so far, and it's like they think they are still about scoring a ton of goals, and I don't know that, A, Peter DeBoer agrees with them, or, B, that the evidence suggests that they're right.
And look, and you alluded to the fact that they're more concerned with going forward than they are coming back. Mark-Edward Vlasic has to play better. He hasn't played well these first few games, but he's not alone. And with Burns and Carlson, we know what they are. They're the offensive defense, and they're the puck movers. They're looking to generate offense and generate chances. The defense will get better when Šimek gets in there, and maybe it's a week, maybe it's 2 weeks, whenever he comes back and he adds an element of physicality and he's a stay-at-home type of defenseman. But right now, the back end of their defense core is beaten up with, you know, Dalton Prout and Jacob Middleton both on the injured list. You need to bring up Trevor Carrick to fill a spot. It's clear they don't trust Tim Heed. So it's and Mario Ferraro is learning on the job as a young player here. There's a lot of question marks at the back end of their defense pairings where they need to get some production. They need to get some accountability and stability from the back end because they know that Carlson and Burns are more concerned with the offensive part of being a defenseman than they are about protecting their own net.
Well, yeah, it is kind of a weird disconnect that their high-flying offensive defensemen are the guys who are up in years, but they're asking all their young, untested guys to be the stalwarts in front of Martin Jones. And Jones does himself no favors either, but that's a weird way to go about it. Typically, if you have a high-flying defenseman, he's, you know, 27, 28, you know, he's got lots of, you know, he's got years ahead of him. The Sharks have a situation where it's just the opposite, where, you know, Burns is in his mid-30s. Carlson's 30, but with a lot of miles on him. And all the young guys that are supposed to make sure that the defensive end holds up, they're playing like young guys. And it's I don't know if it's the ideal situation, but it's the one they created for themselves. And that only works if you have enough firepower up front that you can rely on. And as we've said before, most of that is center and left side of the ice. They're easy to defend because they're easy to crowd.
And for this group, that's what Pete DeBoer's got to figure out, Ray, because these parts aren't going to change in terms of Erik Karlsson's not going anywhere. Brent Burns is not going anywhere. So he's got to see how these pieces will fit and make them two-way defensemen and have them pay attention to that other end of the ice. And you alluded to the guys up front as well. And they were counting on these young guys, and they weren't delivering. They signed Johnny Brodzinski, giving Leon Bergman a chance. Daniel Yertakin. Here's another one that they were counting on to get some production from it. Marcus Sorensen's been dinged up. But they were counting on these younger guys, Ray, to come through. And I haven't seen, frankly, anything that would give me confidence that they can contribute. They really haven't done much. And that's what necessitated the signing of Patrick Marleau, to give Pete DeBoer another guy, a person that he knows he could bring into his dressing room and that he can count on.
Yeah, but can he count on him? I mean, look, I mean, this is a guy, he's 40 now.
It depends on what you want him to, what he's expecting, right? If you're expecting the 30 goal scorer, that Patrick Marleau's not there anymore.
Then what exactly, and I'm asking an open question here because I'm not trying to mm-hmm. say that this is a bad idea yet. He hasn't even played yet. But what is it they think he brings them? And the only thing I can think of off the top of my head, it's one more guy on the left side that maybe allows you to move one of your left wingers to the other side of the ice in hopes of affecting some balance.
And that is possible. And I think when you look at Marleau, at this stage, Ray, yes, he's 40. Can he be a 20-goal scorer anymore? Does he still have that in him?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not like Toronto was trying to keep scores down last year. I mean, I think to a certain extent his game was predicated on his speed and his hands. And while I have no evidence to suggest that his hands have gone bad, he's not nearly the skater he used to be. And that's just normal when you've hit four decades. I mean, you just slow down. And I'll be surprised how different he is from what he was last year in Toronto, because the drop-off came the year before. Last year was the drop-off year. The year before that, he was actually a very useful player for the Leafs. Last year, he didn't help them much, and there was a real hue and cry during the postseason to just make him a healthy scratch because he wasn't giving you anything. So, I mean, I'm going into this with an open mind, but I can't say signing him should fill a Shark fan with a lot of optimism that things are going to change anytime soon.
I think he gives Pete DeBoer a guy he can trust, right, that he knows is a consummate pro and a veteran who will play within the system. And I don't think he had that confidence in Lukáš Radil and Brodzinski and Bergman. Look, some of these young guys are still going to have to play, because you need to get some production and some minutes from the younger players, and you got to try to have them make some type of an impact. But I think he's going to Marleau in this situation. Doug Wilson signing him. Look, I thought it was the right move 3 years ago when they let, or it was 2 years ago, I guess, when they let Patrick Marleau go, because technically this would have been year three of that deal in Toronto when the Sharks were not willing to give him that third year. They're not willing to match the money Toronto was giving him. And it was the right decision to be made. And Marleau now coming back, a different player, clearly, than he was the last time he put on a Shark sweater. But it's a guy that I still think, Ray, that he can play a valuable role on this team. It's just a question of what are they expecting him to do. And by all appearances, in the lines today, practice, getting ready, they're going to play the Blackhawks tomorrow night. But it appeared that the Sharks are putting him right on one of the top lines. He's going, stepping right into the top six. And they're expecting him to come in and contribute right away. At least that's what appears to me, that they're trying to get him on one of those top lines to generate some offense, which has been struggling. Because if the Lions hold form tomorrow night for the matchup with Chicago, he's going to be on a line with Logan Couture and Timo Meier. That's the top line. That's where Patrick Marleau's going right away.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to bring him in and you have expectations, you may as well put him in the most advantageous spot you can. And that is it. I don't know how long he'll stay there, though, because I think there is I almost get a sense, and I have nothing to base this on except my own stupidity, but I got the sense that they signed him to give them a jump start, and that they're not expecting him as a long-term solution for anything. He might just be a placeholder until one of the young guys, you know, suddenly decides to start lifting his end of the piano. But it's sort of a high-risk, low-percentage move in a lot of ways, because, again, it's 40-year-old legs, and they're giving him every chance to succeed, in part because I don't think they have faith that anybody else can do that right now. And they need to fix this soon, because you can watch a season get away from you pretty quickly. I mean, there are a lot of teams that have started slowly and then found their legs, but there are way more that started slowly and stayed there.
My question is with this team, is where is that production going to come from? There was balance, Ray, to this team last year. when you look at the goal production they got with 430 goal scorers last year. Well, one of those guys is gone. He's in Dallas, and it's Joe Pavelski. Joe Pavelski hasn't scored a goal yet for the Stars. But Tomas Hertl, Timo Meier, Logan Couture, these got to be the guys that have to step up. And so far, they've been quiet. We haven't heard much from these guys at all.
No, I mean, I think you're right. They've got 5 goals in 4 games. I mean, that's, you know, that just jumps out at you. But the place where they're losing these games is they get beaten at the other end. And I don't know that this is a team right now that's built to overcome an early deficit. I mean, I don't look at it and say they're loaded with scorers. I mean, you know, Couture is a guy who typically starts slowly and then suddenly becomes the impact guy in March, April, and May. Thornton is not going to get you a lot of goals anymore. That's not how he's wired. Which means that Hertl and Meier and Kane have to be exceptional all the time. And I don't know if they're ready for that, because that's a huge thing to ask. You're asking each of them to be one of the top 20 to 25 forwards in the league. And I don't think they're that. So they almost have to overachieve to give these guys a chance to achieve until they fix the problems on the other half of the ice and especially at the back end. Because I think that's where the numbers say they are most vulnerable, where they are easiest to beat.
And the other guy they got to get some production from, Ray, is Kevin LeBanc. He has been disastrous so far. He is a -7 through the first 4 games. He's generated 13 shots through the 4 games. But this was initially when you're penciling out the roster and configuring the lines going into the season, there was thought that Kevin LeBanc could be your number one right wing. And he's a -7 through the first 4 games of the season.
Well, I hate to do this, but I'm going to say I wasn't one of those people. I think they put him there more out of hope than actual evidence. I think they knew going in that the right side of their attack was deficient. And the proof of that was LeBanc on the front on the top line. I don't think he's a special player. I think he's an okay guy. He looks to me like third line material. I don't see him as a top 6 guy. And the fact that people were projecting that with an eye toward it suddenly infusing him with a talent that I don't think he's shown yet speaks to the problem here, which is they built a roster that they hoped would be really good as opposed to knowing it was going to be really good like they did last year or the year before. Last year, they went for it because they believed they were that close. And it turned out they were right. Now they sort of, we're going to start the transition. And Pavelski and the contract issues that they had sort of, you know, allowed Wilson to think that way. But through 4 games, it doesn't look like much of their hope is being realized. It's just the things that people had questions about, they don't have questions about them anymore. They're saying they're clearly deficiencies that playoff teams don't have.
So 0-4 through 4 games, 2 losses to Vegas, and then he loses to Anaheim on the back end of a back-to-back after the home opener against the Golden Knights. Then you go to Nashville, and you and I got into this last week, that we feel the Predators could be among the elite, if not the best team in the Western Conference. So it was a difficult schedule to navigate through the first 4 games. You have Chicago on the road tomorrow night before you come back and play Calgary on Sunday at the Tank. But at 0-4 through 4 games and not looking good, I thought they were better in the game against Nashville, and I thought for a lot of the game against the Preds, Ray, they carried the play, but they made too many mistakes. Nashville's too good of a team, and the Predators capitalized. So what point do you start to press the panic button that this team is 0-4 through 4 games?
Well, they're going to be, you know, there'll be something and something as of tomorrow night. I think if they're like 2-6-2 after 10, I think you start to worry because they don't have a goaltender who can save them while they try to figure themselves out. I mean, St. Louis last year got off to a horrific start. They were the worst team in hockey at the start of the year. But they had Jordan Binnington. And everybody knew that at some point he had to come up.
But
the Sharks have
no
Jordan Binnington.
But, Ray, Binnington was the fourth goaltender coming out of St. Louis Blues camp last season.
But once the season started, you could hear people in St. Louis saying, when are they bringing up Binnington? When are we going to, you know. They were talking about him like he was the future. He was forthcoming out, but it wasn't because of anything other than they thought they had better goaltenders, and they found out almost immediately they didn't. And I can remember distinctly reading in December that Binnington will be called up shortly. And they clearly had an idea that he was a card that they were going to have to play sooner or later. Who's San Jose's Jordan Binnington? It's not Aaron Dell. I mean, who's the guy that they have in reserve that can change this? The fact is they don't have anybody, which is why they went out and got Marleau. I mean, that's the thing, is that the Sharks are playing with a very thin margin for error. And that's not the way you overcome a slow start. You have to be able to say, we can change this up in a material way if we're not getting what we want. Other than Schimmick, how do they do that? I mean, I don't see it.
I'm not sure either. And that's a big problem right now for Doug Wilson and Joe Will and the Sharks front office and Peter DeBoer to figure this out. And look, the goaltenders down in at the Barracuda, they're fine. Joseph Cornar and Andrew Shortridge. But I'm with you. It's not like they're going to pressure Jones and put some heat on him to play better. And Aaron Dell was disappointing last season, and he didn't look good in the game against Anaheim on the back end of the back-to-back. And it's almost as if they need somebody to push Martin Jones to be better at this point, because right now he's the guy, and he's okay. And I don't think he's played that poorly. I don't think he's played well. He's just been okay so far. But the way this team is constructed, and I'm with you, Ray, he can't just be okay. He's got to be well above average.
And the problem is that I don't think this is a question of him needing a push. I don't think this is a question of him just needing a little extra motivation. This may be who he is, where he is going to be as good as the defenders in front of him. And the defenders in front of him right now aren't very good. And he's not going to change that single-handedly. I don't see him as that kind of guy. And, I mean, look, in a month I could be wrong. He might suddenly develop into the Carey Price West guy that people thought he was going to be when he was in L.A.
And he was terrific once the Sharks got down 3-1 in that series against Vegas. He was sensational the rest of that series.
Oh, no question. He is capable of it. But his season didn't suggest that. And for most of his career in San Jose, his ceiling is pretty good. The top end of his game is he won't get you beat. But they need more from him than that. They need him basically cheating the result, which is basically playing better than the guys in front of him and saving them from themselves. And I don't know if he has that in him consistently.
And they're going to need something from him, because to pick up the D in front of him, unless, are we going to see an adjustment from Burns? Are we going to see an adjustment from Carlson to be more defensive-minded than they have been? Because, as we know, that's not their track record. But will they have to adjust knowing the deficiencies of this team?
If they are willing to do that, the Sharks have a shot. If they view this as, no, I am what I am, and that's all that I am, this may be over before it starts. And it may get Peter DeBoer fired, because while I think DeBoer has the right instincts about how this team should play, it's not playing that way. And I think the easiest way to get them to play that way is to have Burns and Carlson as the examples, which is to say, you don't have to join every rush. Sometimes we just need you to defend because the guys behind you aren't as good as you are. We need you to expand your game at least for a while. Because if that doesn't happen and these guys don't turn this around, by December, they may be in the kind of hole that doesn't get them into the playoffs at all. And at that point, yeah, guys lose their jobs.
Look, I know it's only four games in, and you hate to put a label on a game, but when you look at the matchup with the Blackhawks tomorrow night, you're not going to say it's a must-win game, but in a lot of ways, how desperate do they need to win this game against Chicago?
They need to be more desperate than Chicago. The Blackhawks have only played once because they played overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're not a great team either. So I think the Sharks at least have to look like they can go for three full periods. If they do that, they ought to win, but sometimes you don't get puck luck. But the Sharks have to look like they are the equal of anybody right now, because as you look at all their numbers, not just the standings, but all the analytics, they look like they're significantly worse than most. So I think if for no other reason, they need to look good against Chicago just to convince themselves that they're capable of it. Because I don't think Patrick Marleau walking into that room changes it into a magical place again. I mean, I'm never a big guy on nostalgic signings, and maybe this wasn't
that. I can't
that.
Believe that you're not big on nostalgic signings. That shocks me, Ray.
I understand that. But if you're 40, you better have some game. You better be a lot closer to Chris Chelios or Gordie Howe than most 40-year-olds. And I don't know that I see that from him, because I saw the fall off last year. If the Leafs got a good year out of him and decided to cut him loose just because a salary cap matters, then I'd say, well, this is an interesting signing. But if that were the case, they would have signed him before the season started.
You look at the upcoming schedule, and there's some winnable games here. Now, first off, they got to play better. That's paramount. This team has to play more consistent and not just play in spurts. They need to play a good 60 minutes. But Chicago tomorrow night, Calgary Sunday, Carolina Hurricanes next week, although the Hurricanes, of course, made the Eastern Conference Finals last year in Buffalo.
And
but
they
you
are,
have three at
are,
home after this game against Chicago. Here's an opportunity to get some wins.
No, there are. Well, I don't like their chance against Carolina. I think Carolina right now is as good as there is. Buffalo, who knows? They always start fast and go in the toilet. But this road trip, at least the first three games of it, those are games where you have to go, we got to get at least four or five out of that. They've got to get a win over Ottawa, because Ottawa's the worst team in the world. I think they've got to get a win over Montreal, because I don't believe in Montreal. I mean, it saddens me to say so, but they look subordinary again. Buffalo, you never know.
And they've never played well in Buffalo.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they have, and they're going to have to steal a game either in Toronto or Boston.
And the Toronto game will be a big challenge, because that's on the back end of a back-to-back after they play in Montreal the night before. But Chicago, then they come home for three, and we'll reassess where this team is, and we'll have another edition next week, and hopefully, Ray, we'll talk about some wins, right? I mean,
oh, I don't care if they win or not. That's up to them. I'll talk about whatever they give me.
Darn it, I care if they win or not, because it makes it more interesting for me.
Well, you know, look, I'm at this point of my career, I'm just killing my life in half-hour increments, and we successfully did that again today.
We did it again, and we will be back next week with another installment. You can always find it, of course, on 95.7thegame.com.
And it may
with
have a different
Ray
name.
Ratto, Roxy Bernstein, this has been another edition. Thanks for tuning in to our podcast, Pursuit of the Cup.
Bye, kids.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.